Cynthia L. Simmons.
When I was a little girl, my family took a trip to California, and we met family that I did not know. And there were some boys that were very rambunctious. And one of them took a towel and wrapped it up around itself, kind of made a long little whip out of it and was whacking us with it. I think I was the only girl, and I was very offended when he whacked me with that towel and hurt me. Now, I was not truly injured, but I was wronged, and I let my parents know that I was wronged. We all have that internal sense of justice, and we know when we're treated unfairly. Our country actually lists our rights in what is called the Bill of Rights, and it's part of the Constitution.
I am part of DAR, Daughters of the American Revolution, and we celebrate September as the month when the Constitution was signed. So it's important to know what's in it.
Today I have Tammy Largan with me, and she is a history teacher, and she's going to give us some background on the Bill of Rights. Welcome, Tammy.
Hi, thanks, Cynthia, for inviting me.
Tammy, what is the Bill of Rights and why was it written?
Well, first of all, you need to know it actually didn't need to be written. Originally, when James Madison penned the preamble, everything that needed to be said was written for a limited government. The problem was there were men who were there saying, but we need to be more specific. We need to say more specifically what it is people needed. The problem is when you do that, you take away the freedoms and add more regulation. And again, you no longer have a limited government. Mm-hmm. Both Madison and Hamilton weren't concerned with the lack of a Bill of Rights, nor did they see limited government as a threat to personal freedom. But Jefferson did. He wanted a Bill of Rights. He wanted to explain those rights, and he wanted them given by the government.
Talk about what they are and how were they ratified, and let's go into them because we want to know what they said.
Well, I think it's important that we actually cover the preamble just a little bit.
Okay.
Is for some reason, we tend to think that the Bill of Rights is the end-all be-all of the Constitution. But really, when you consider the fact that the writer, James Madison, wrote the preamble first, thinking he had covered all of this, I think it's important that we kind of look at that.
Okay.
So let's start with just kind of breaking it down. We, the people of the United States, notice there's no specific race, gender, or color. While Madison knew people of color and women were not allowed to vote at this time, he and many others also knew there would be a time when all of that would be considered. So naturally, he wrote, "We the people." In order to form a more perfect union, this is exactly all this was. The purpose of the Constitution and the reason the preamble was written just as a covenant and a contract for the colonies to join their forces for the good of the people, to establish justice. The Constitution called for a federal and national system of law and courts. We became a nation of nature's law and nature's God's law. All justice at this time was about God's law, not man's law. This changes during the progressive movement and continues today. Ensure domestic tranquility. That basically talks about domestic peace and order. Now, let's think about some of the things that have happened in the recent year, a couple years. There's been a few squabbles before the war between the states, such as Shay's Rebellion, there was a slave revolt. But the last couple of years proves that we're moving away from tranquility. Provide for the common defense. This meant military protection for citizens in both domestic and foreign situations. But when this was written, there was no military. There was no paid soldier. Everybody was a part of the militia. When written, this was a small affair, but now military spending is one of the largest in our economy. Promote the general welfare. This means that everyone has a right to pursue life as long as it brings no harm to others. Less government, less regulation, less taxation. All of these open the doors to innovation, job opportunities, and a better life economically. But the phrase refers to the general welfare and not that of a specific group. Secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Freedom comes from God, but that freedom for good receives blessings for generation upon generation. And of course, do ordain and establish the Constitution of the United States to create or invest officially. So as you can see, pretty much everything that needed to be said was said in the preamble. But unfortunately, several of our founding fathers decided that just wasn't enough.
What does the first part of the Bill of Rights say?
The first one of the Bill of Rights says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is. And it's not about rights. Everybody talks about these as being our rights. But what we don't understand is really what they are freedoms. All of these freedoms were given by God. They exist everywhere. But the difference is whether you can act on them or not. So our founding fathers gave us that opportunity by creating the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about number two?
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Jefferson once said, no free men shall ever be barred from the use of guns. When only the government or one part of society has guns, then the society is not free. And we forget this. The hard part for us as Americans is today in our culture is understanding what a well-regulated militia is. And what's understanding is in order to have a free state, you have to have a well-regulated militia. You have to have a group of people that still want to believe in the original constitution of not only your country, but your state as well. And the militia is your bridge to individual responsibility and mutual protection. They are regulated by the government. They're not created or maintained by the government. As a free state, the purpose of a militia is to stop the tyrannical leader who removes or changes law without the consent of the people. Once again, while we are a constitutional republic with representation, we the people have to participate to maintain our freedoms through the use of the First Amendment and the ballot box. The ballot box has to trump the ammo box, and we need to exhaust every possibility before we take up arms. But the hard part also is the fact that we don't live in the society that the founding fathers lived in. The right of the people to keep and bear arms should not be infringed is something that people think they are being infringed upon because you have the right to bear arms. And so as we watch and see that we are now the only country who constitutionally has a right to bear arms, it's kind of a dying opportunity, and it's taking away the freedoms of people all over the world.
Okay, what about number three?
No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. There are a lot of people who would like to see this amendment removed, saying it's just outdated and unnecessary. But I'm not sure they understand the ramifications of removal. Let's just say that America is at war on her own soil. As a country, we just experienced in COVID that moving food, necessities, construction, and other items would be really difficult in a time of war on our own soil. Many would lose their jobs, their homes, family members to the war. Most would be living hand to mouth with subsidies from the government. But now to receive much of these needed subsidies, you would have to house soldiers. You barely have enough food and time to maintain your own household. What if a soldier was required to live with you, who wasn't a nice person, had an unknown criminal record, or worse, was a spy for the other side? Are you going to want to have that Third Amendment? This is what Americans faced during the British rule. We can't even fathom being forced to house someone we've never met.
Yep. What about number four?
The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. And no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. While many have quoted the First and Third Amendments for rights to privacy, I believe it's the fourth one that's the closest to this belief. There's no place in the Bill of Rights that gives you the right to privacy, just unreasonable searches. The right to privacy has been used in many cases of law, and some have been winners, such as Roe versus Wade. But just like you won't find the separation of church and state in the Constitution, you also not find the right to privacy. The right of the person to be secure in their persons, house, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. An unreasonable search is one in which there's no probable cause to show that you are in the wrong, and no search warrant that has ever been officiated by a judge or magistrate. What people don't understand a lot of times is how often search warrants are given that aren't necessarily done correctly. And we as American citizens do not take the time to read the search warrant that's being delivered. The other question is that you as a citizen have the right to call the courthouse, speak with the distributing judge, and be able to find out whether this was actually given by him. It's amazing how many illegal searches we have in this country. And as American citizens, we tend to just step back when the doors get blown open.
So you can actually call the judge and say, did this really happen? Wow, I didn't know that. That's amazing.
We as Americans tend to step back from our police and our court system. The thing is the court system is paid for by us. We need to stand up for our rights, and we need to know them well enough to say, I'm sorry, this says you have the right to search my shed. My shed is outside the door.
Four. Okay, what's five?
This one's a long one. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of grand jury, except in cases arising in the land of naval force or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be compelled in the criminal case to be witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation.
So this is kind of criminal law, correct?
Yeah, so pretty much 5 through 8 covers all the things that you might have to deal with if you are charged with some type of crime. So there's huge chunks of information instead of everything being an individual amendment. Some of the things that are really important though are, for instance, people kind of remember Double Jeopardy because of the movie. You know, they remember seeing that movie and going, oh, I didn't know that you couldn't be charged for the same crime more than once. And that's a very important thing. We tend to be a society that sometimes wants to keep pushing towards the same goal, even though that goal has already been met through the court system. And so they just keep throwing mud at it, hoping it'll stick. But you can't do that in our judicial system. The other thing that's real popular right now is, nor shall private property be taken for public use without compensation. We're hearing more and more about eminent domain. And that's really what this is all about. When the city or the state would like to take property at a cheap rate because they see that the property could earn more tax dollars, whether it's creating a road and that road's being met with more tax dollars because of tourism, or whether it's a building or a parking lot for a small municipal city. We happen to have that problem here in Roswell, where we tend to come to the aid of those who seem to be attacked for the eminent domain perspective.
How about number 6?
In all criminal prosecution, the accused shall enjoy the right of a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district where the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witness in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. This again, like you said, was criminal law that continues on. But in this case, it's verifying that you have access to a speedy and public trial. It's kind of comical at this point because I think our population has gotten the better of us. It's not unusual for people to sit in jail for various accusations of a federal crime for as much as 6 months without any possibility of bail. Now, they've been charged, but because the system is so backed up, they might not have the opportunity of bail according to the crime in which they've committed. To be confronted with witnesses against him, this is the opportunity for you to have cross-examination of a witness. And of course, that can be very revealing for both the prosecution and the defender. To have the right to obtain witnesses, even by subpoena, you know, I'm amazed at how many people I talk to who say, I had witnesses, but they just won't come forward. Well, our court actually says you can have them subpoenaed, and then they don't really have much of a choice but to come forward. And because we request that they tell the truth so that they don't perjure themselves, it gives great opportunity. The other thing we offer is a free attorney at the government's expense.
Okay, how about number 7? And this is civil cases.
Yes, this really has to do with just that money thing. You know, what it is that you need. The difference between civil law and criminal law is literally criminal law means they're going to do some jail time. Civil law usually has to do with dollars. So in suits at common law, where the value is in controversy shall exceed $20, the right by trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. The suits at common law where the value of controversy shall exceed $20 by the right of a jury is kind of interesting. So if you have something where somebody owes you $20 or more, you have the right to have a case brought against them. But the other part is very interesting in that if the jury decides what the ruling is going to be on that case, there is no judge or magistrate that is allowed to change that. They are not allowed to throw out the verdict of any jury. So it actually extends, even though it mainly covers civil law, I do believe that also covers criminal law as well.
Okay, number 8.
Number 8 is a continuation of some of the criminal law in that it has to do with bail bonds. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Excess bail shall not be required. The right not to have excess bail imposed on unless the person is a threat to public safety or flee from the district. This is where we get bail bondsmen who offer the opportunity in order to pay your bail. The funny thing is when you sign on the dotted line of a bail bondsman, you lose a lot of rights. So if you don't show up at court, he has the right to tie you up and throw you in his trunk because you have signed off some of that. As far as excess fines, the right to avoid excess fines, the punishment must fit the crime. So if one of those things that's really sad is these young people who they find themselves in really bad predicaments. And unfortunately, our courts have gone as far as saying, okay, you owe $250,000 in a fine, but you're talking about somebody who's right out of high school or right out of college. And that is an excessive fine imposed. No cruel or unusual punishment inflicted is the right to avoid the imposition of cruel or unusual punishment. Mutilation and extreme torture were really common practice in Europe when this was written. And it's interesting, but the death penalty is not considered cruel and unusual punishment, but it is very controversial among both Christians and non-Christians alike as to whether the death penalty should be a part of our federal law.
9 and 10 are very interesting. Can you cover those now?
Well, 9 and 10 are what we call blanket amendments. They were created because Hamilton threw a fit and said, there are rights that are not listed here. You're limiting what people are going to understand. And so he jumped up and he said, this isn't right. There needs to be something that if we haven't listed it, they still have access to their rights. So number 9 is our first one. And this one actually, if it's not listed in the Bill of Rights, this gives you the opportunity to still have the right to do certain things as a person. So this doesn't have to do with the state. This just has to do with you as a person. So basically, if you do not see a right listed, that doesn't mean the right is not available to you as a person. This would include things like choosing your education, your occupation, changing a location of living, and gaining economic means. Because a lot of times, we don't realize it, but in other countries, especially countries that are under communist rule, people do not have a choice of where they're going to live. People do not have a choice of what their occupation is going to be or what their education can be. That's what the amendment number 9 does, is it gives us those freedoms to make a lot of choices that in a lot of other countries, you don't have those choices.
Right. Number 10.
Number 10, the controversial amendment of life. The power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited it by the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Really, that's according to the people within the state. So if the people in the state want to do something, in other words, they voted something in. A good example would be California voted in that they were going to be a certain percentage of green energy by a certain date. And they, as the people, made that choice, even though the federal government doesn't have anything to say about those rights. That gives the state of California the right to do that. And because of that, they tend to go through a lot of what we call brownouts, right? And so the people have instilled that on their own.
They did it themselves.
Yes, exactly. They made those decisions on themselves. So this is probably one of the most controversial of the Bill of Rights. It was with this amendment that states like New York wanted to secede from the Union during the War of 1812. And then later the South uses it to declare their separation before the war between the states. It's one of those that, to tell you the truth, between the 9th and the 10th amendments, I think it's where you're going to see a lot of court cases that come up that have to do with the demand on things like face masks and vaccines. Because states are making rulings that are different than federal governments are making, and individual people have to have rights in order to make decisions for their families about being hired by different organizations that are pushing these requirements. So we're going to hear a lot, I think, about the 9th and 10th Amendment over the next couple of years.
You know, we have lived in the United States so long that we have gotten used to our freedom. But as I read back in the times of World War II, I was very surprised that people had to get permission to go places. Regardless of where they were going to go, they had to apply numerous places, and it was a very complicated process. And that's something that we have never experienced.
Yeah, I think during COVID was the first time that Americans started to see that there are possibilities that their rights can be limited. We are now the oldest continuous constitution in the world. Mm-hmm. The state of Massachusetts constitution is actually way older, but as a national constitution, we've been very successful, and basically for four reasons. Number one, the framers tried to look past their own personal and contemporary interests to create a document that would even change during various circumstances. They made it so that change could happen. Mm-hmm. Number two, they tried to make the will of the people, as best as they understood, paramount to limit the powers of government. They couldn't just say within our culture, this is how the world's always going to be. Our founding fathers did try really hard to think in the future, how do we write this in a way that it's only going to need minimal change to meet the needs from generation to generation to generation? The third thing is the framers based the Constitution on ideals of fairness and equality under the law. They did not single out one group or one class of people. They didn't say only the privileged are going to have these opportunities. And then, of course, the fourth thing is the document has the flexibility and is allowed later Americans to amend it as needed. Yeah. And in places where we felt like we needed to amend it, such as allowing people of color and gender to vote, allowing a change in how we vote for our senators, how long a president can reside as president. It's because our founding fathers had the forethought to think, hey, you know what? There are going to be times when something's going to have to change. Mm-hmm. And that's what's made us a great success.
I think it has. For 234 years, it's a great success. Right. Thank you, Tammy. I appreciate this. A lot of information, a lot of good information, and something that people a lot of times don't know, and we want to inform them.